was a 7 mile trail race, and boy, that was a revelation. I hadn't run a race in ages, and this was really gonzo, jumping over tree branches and roots and rocks, and I had a total blast doing that.
That's Gene Dykes, a runner from Philadelphia, describing his first competition. Since that 7 miler, Gene has gone on to run courses spanning over 200 miles. He's run sub 3 hour marathons, and today runs nearly 3,000 miles a year. Oh, and there's one more thing you should know about Gene. He's 70 years old and started running competitively in his 60s. Welcome to Athletes Unfiltered, inspiring stories from the Strava community told by the runners and cyclists who live them. I'm your host, Hillary Allen. On today's episode, we're exploring aging and what happens to us as athletes when we get older. How does it affect our bodies and our pursuit of the sports we love? And what if, instead of making things harder, we actually find ourselves getting better with age? Here's Gene again.
You know that all runners get the question, 100 times a year, which is, isn't that bad for your knees? Well, I have a story for them. My knees were hurting pretty bad when I started running, and now they're in terrific shape. So, no, running has not hurt my knees, and in fact, I'm quite convinced it's making them stronger. I ran a 50-miler and then a 100-miler. And the 100-miler, I was sick for the last 60 miles. I don't know, once it gets in your head that, hey, you got to beat last year. So I picked a harder 100-miler for the next year and trained harder. So will I try and go farther than 200 miles? I'm not sure. Well, the longest of those was 238, so I have to maybe try and beat that someday. But there are longer races out there. Who knows? I haven't decided what I'm going to do.
We'll hear from Gene again later in the episode, but first, I want to introduce you to Brad Huff, a cyclist from Missouri. So there's this idea that if you want to be a professional athlete, you have to accomplish certain things by certain ages. You have to hit this marker when you're 10, win this competition at 15, do this when you're 20, this when you're 25. But success in sports isn't just about ticking off boxes. It's also about the experiences you've had, the lessons you've learned, and the emotional and social intelligence you've gained. And for those things, there's no such thing as a normal timeline. This was certainly true for Brad, who fell in love with road biking at a young age and dreamed of going pro.
Like any person that really gravitates to cycling, you know, you need that outlet in life. You need something to be able to expend your energy. And that was definitely a component for me. But I definitely fell in love with it quick and realized I was pretty decent at it early on. I made the national team within my first year of being on the road bike.
In 1999, Brad went to Japan for his first race, the Tour of Hokkaido. He was just 20 years old and ready to show the world what he was made of. But on the first day, Brad fell miles behind the main group. And though he tried as hard as he couldn't catch up. In racing, there's this thing called the broom wagon. It's a car that drives behind the pack and picks up stragglers that have no chance of catching up to the others.
And they'll politely ask you to get in the car because you're outside of the police caravan and it's a little dangerous for you to keep riding on the roads. And it'd probably be best if you get in the car because we'd like to get home before dinner. And so that's what the broom wagon is they pick up the guys or girls that have been dropped from the race, that aren't able to keep the pace, so that they can lick their wounds in the car and kind of figure out what happened that day and go back with their dignity slightly intact.
Brad was picked up by the broom wagon. He didn't finish the race. He was devastated. He couldn't comprehend what had gone wrong. And then he got it in his head that the reason he'd failed was because of his weight. He decided he was too heavy.
And really, I wasn't. I was you know, at the time, 100, I don't even know, 60 pounds, 155 pounds. And I just started cutting all intake, trying to be as lean as possible, and really didn't realize how detrimental it was for my overall health and training.
Brad started cutting calories, restricting food intake, losing weight. He became weak, constantly tired, frail. Cycling became harder. But Brad was young, and he didn't have the insight to know what he was doing was counterproductive and harmful.
I really struggled in that next year to kind of find form, was always injured just because of it, just really just a lack of nutrients and overtraining at the same time. And then I had an Achilles strain that really just ended everything, and I had to just stop and kind of reassess what I was doing in my life and figuring out what I was doing to my body and trying to achieve this, you know, idea in my head of being skinnier to be fast.
Brad decided to put biking on pause and go back to school.
I remember sitting in my Nutrition 101, and we were talking about nutrition-related deficiencies, and let's say there was 10 of them, and I had like 7 of 10 just sitting in class, and I was like, okay, this is some alarm bells. You know, I really need to reevaluate what I'm doing.
It was a wake-up call for Brad. He made it his mission to turn his life around.
I tried to get healthy, and I tried to be able to train and ride the bike without just feeling like death all the time and fatigued and lightheaded and, you know, just in general malaise all the time. And so when I was able to really come back healthier, and I was literally 50 pounds or more heavier than I was when I left the sport, I was stronger, faster, and I was actually climbing better than I ever had as skinny Brad.
Once he started taking care of himself, Brad became unstoppable. Right out of college, he signed with Jonathan Vodder's TIAA Cref team for the 2006 season. Brad had done it. He'd gone pro. It wasn't the time frame he'd anticipated. Brad was 26 at the time. But he recognized that the mistakes he made when he was younger were part of the reason he was successful. He needed those setbacks.
I was a lot older than your typical professional cyclist for his first year. Which was all part of, you know, kind of my education of my body, health. You know, whenever I had made the national team in 1999, I was only 20 years old. And it showed that I wasn't ready for it because I created this idea in my head that I had to be skinny and, you know, virtually had anorexia. And, you know, I wasn't mentally able to handle the defeat and the difficulties that would come from being a professional cyclist or attempting to be a professional cyclist. And so, the education that I got along the way really shaped me into the man I was turning pro. Even though I was still green, I was definitely more at peace, but yet still had the aspirations of anything as possible.
Brad's career took off, and he relished every moment of it. His first race was the Tour of California.
We're up against the best pros in the world, and man, to sit in that team meeting and say, hey, we're going, you know, we're going to be active, we're going to be in breakaways, we're going to try for the sprints, and just think that I'm one of the guys there going for that, it was incredible. But I was so, like, ignorance was bliss at that point. You know, I had nothing to lose. In that very first stage, I pulled off a fourth place out of nowhere, and you know, that just kind of set the ball rolling for my whole career of just really, the unexpected is possible at any moment.
Brad trained hard. He cycled faster than he ever had before. As an older cyclist, he brought a degree of maturity to the team, a perspective on cycling that he didn't have when he was younger.
It is such a selfish, individual sport where everyone is so wrapped up in themselves and their training and their goals and what they want to win and what they want to perform in, that they kind of lose sight of the importance of that male or female that's clipped in right next to you in the race. And, you know, I really did my best to be there for my teammates more than I was there for myself. And, you know, that doing deeds for others kind of lifts you up to another level, really carried me through my career for the decade plus that I was in it.
Brad set the standard for support, lifting his teammates up when they were down. because he knew what it was like to go through tough times and how amazing it is to have the support of others when you're working to regain perspective and confidence. Brad's younger teammates emulated him by supporting each other and eventually supporting Brad when things again got tough for him.
I had a couple rough years on the personal side, off the bike, which really did make me a little bit more difficult to be around, a little hardened. Cycling definitely is very, very hard on relationships. I've seen many, many friends, relationships crumble underneath the pressure of them traveling and competing and being selfish throughout the year. I really struggled to balance both of them. You know, at one time I was married. Things just didn't work out between us, but we were doing our best to make it work. It put me in a really depressed state because I wasn't able to grasp. I wasn't able to do the same thing that I had done as an athlete, which is fix it and make it better. That headspace, that mental space really carried over onto the bike, and it made it difficult to put in the hours needed to perform at the top level. And so I definitely struggled. I can look back at those times and see how that team atmosphere helped carry me through it and really helped me get into a better headspace. I had some incredible teammates that really lifted me up and helped me out and let me sleep on their couch for, 2 months as I tried to understand life.
Brad was a professional cyclist for 11 years. When he first got into cycling at age 20, he was too young, unprepared for what the sport demanded. But towards the end of his years as a pro, Brad faced a very different problem. Suddenly, he found himself becoming too old.
Being, 38, 39, even 37, it started to weigh on me. I wasn't recovering as well. I was at Cascade Classic last year. I got dropped on one of the big climbs, and there was 100 guys going over the top of the climb in the main group, and I was out the back. I was like, okay, this is about time for me to think about moving on. Fast forward to my very last race in Europe, which was Tour of Germany, just a couple weeks ago. Stage 3, I think. I get dropped, and I'm like, oh man, okay, maybe I'll catch back on. And if I said, all right, if I get over this hill and I can still see him, I'm going to keep chasing. Well, I go over the hill and I can't see anything. I don't even, there's, barely farmlands out there to look at. And so I ended up in the broom wagon, my very last race. So it was kind of like, you know what? This is a full circle. It's time. It's time to really move on. The way I started is the way I finished in the broom wagon. I definitely don't feel like it's the end. I just feel like it's a possibility of new beginnings in my career as an athlete or just as a human being. I'm not going to be able to perform at that top level that you need to be a professional cyclist racing all over the world. But yet, I'm still incredibly capable athletically or performance or just general taking out the trash. I'm just really happy that I was able to finish off on my own accord. I was able to say whenever I wanted to say when. There wasn't an, oh crap, what next? But every single person you meet asks you, oh, well, what are you going to do now? Or what are you going to do now? Where are you going to go? And I'm excited about it at the same time. Yes, I'm extremely nervous about what's next.
But despite his nerves, Brad knows he's going to be okay. Because he knows there's no one set path for athletes. Despite what people say about age, about timelines, if you have the drive to succeed and life lessons to help you along the way, you can do anything. Our next story of aging comes from Patricia Bertellier, a cyclist from France. Many of us have memories of learning to ride a bike when we were kids, our parents taking us out, telling us to pedal, 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 with words of encouragement and band-aids at the ready to patch us up when we fell. Well, for Patricia and her daughter, the roles were reversed.
I was quite mature, you could say, when I came to cycling. I was 40 years old, and I was just back from Réunion Island, where I'd lived for 5 years. and because there were horses about 7 or 8 kilometers from my home, and my daughter wanted to go and see them every evening. So, it was a bit far for walking, and that's how it started. My daughter helped me learn how to, you know, to do bike. It was a difficult thing to learn because, I didn't know how to ride bikes, really. And it felt strange. And I don't know, but for the first 2 years, I had about, 10 crashes. Some were very serious, others less. But, I was all bruised and scratches and broken bones. But I liked that so much that I just kept, riding bikes. No matter what.
Patricia started taking rides through the Auvergne countryside, exploring the hills, mountains, and forest, and it changed how she saw herself and the world.
It pushed the walls away. You know, my world got bigger and bigger, and it has never stopped getting bigger since then, actually. I didn't always respect my body. I was addicted to smoking and maybe some binge drinking. I'd say my life was too pent up, I felt a bit like I was in jail. When I'm riding long distances, I feel closer to my body. In France, women are not considered really, they are equal to men, but, there is always that patronizing thing, or we are the subject to be seduced, or whatever. If you are a woman, you have to be pretty and to act in a certain way to men, to be different. You really feel that something is preventing you from being you openly because you're too much in contradiction or in opposition with what women are supposed to do.
For decades, Patricia resigned herself to certain gender constraints. But once she started biking, she felt a sense of power. Biking gave her the authority to break away from stereotypes and to do something extraordinary. After riding just for fun, Patricia decided to take her hobby to the next level. She tried out road racing, beginning with L'Étape de Tours, a 200-kilometer race across France, and she loved it. Patricia continued competing, building up her endurance to finally participate in the Paris-Brest-Paris, a 1,200-kilometer race that draws thousands of athletes from all over the world. It was during this race that Patricia had a sensation while biking. One she would experience again and again in the following years. Here's how she describes it.
After a few hundred kilometers, you get to the center of yourself and to the center of your energy. And that's when it started getting magic, really. Because you can feel, you can sense that your body and nature and the bike and my brain, everything is together. There's no barrier, really.
Following the PBP, Patricia continued doing ultra-distance road racing, registering for competitions across France. But as time went on, she began to feel those same gender stereotypes at play.
There are not that many women. The men racers would tell me where to stay in the peloton, not to go in the front, not to do that, or how to do this and that. Well, they thought I didn't know things. And so they sort of patronized me.
Patricia knew there was a biking community out there for her. And so she decided again to push herself, to expand her world. She started reading American blogs and discovered ultra-distance bike packing.
So mountain bike packing is about, going long distances on your bike. So you carry your own food, your own drinks, your own mechanic set, your own sleeping bag. And then you're trying to do as many kilometers as possible in the day. because the distances are huge, always more than 1,000 kilometers. I had never done anything like that before.
Patricia fell in love with the sport, and what's more, with the community.
I've been trying to find, and I have found them in mountain bike packing. People who, like me, are always challenging themselves, because you have so many kilometers to do, so many days ahead of you with you are to manage on your own, and you can only count on yourself. And I think it gets you close to the others, and you feel that fellowship, really, deeply. You can't compete with them, against them anymore.
It's been more than two decades since Patricia first got on a bike. Today, she's 62 years old, and while she's doing better than ever in her sport, she recognizes that she's not a typical bike racer.
I don't spend time thinking of my age, really. But sometimes I see people's reaction, and it's clear that they think, my God, she is a bit crazy to do that at her age. It's never too late. As long as there's life, there's a possibility, lots of possibilities, huge possibilities. Well, that's my belief. The surprising thing is that everything comes easy, you know, and everything is easy. And full of joy.
That was Patricia Bertellier. On this episode of Athletes Unfiltered, we're talking about aging, how it changes the relationship we have with the sports we love. We've been exploring this idea that maybe getting older isn't so bad, that maybe it can be an advantage, and that maybe it can bring us wisdom, confidence, and the ability to keep going, one we could have never imagined. This has certainly been the case for Jean Dykes, who we heard from earlier. Jean grew up in the 50s and 60s, long before running was cool.
Running I picked up on my own. Nobody else in the family ran, and this was back in the days when nobody ran. This was before the first books about running were published, and people would stop and stare when you ran. I don't know what came over me. Actually, I do. There was a girl that lived 3 miles away, and I said, gee, that'd be fun if I ran over there, and I've been running ever since.
Gene didn't care that running wasn't very popular at the time. He enjoyed it, so he kept at it.
So I ran high school track for junior and senior years. Well, I thought, hey, I'm pretty hot stuff at this. I was pretty good at the 2 mile. When I went to college, however, I was totally blown off the track. 2 mile, mile, 880. That shows you how old I am. They ran the 880, not the 800 back then. I was totally convinced that I was at best a mediocre runner.
Running used to be fun for Gene, something he was good at that made him feel good too. But it suddenly lost its spark. So he quit.
After college, I ran intermittently. I don't think I ever stopped jogging consciously. Just, you know, life gets in the way, and maybe I didn't for a while, and suddenly I found myself out of shape, and then I would jog back in and out. I was content to run when I wanted to, and not when I couldn't.
Gene didn't run for a long time, but then decades later, as he approached his 56th birthday, he suddenly found himself missing the sport he'd once loved so much. He started jogging again with his friends. At first, just once a week, then twice. And when he felt like he was ready, he signed up for a trail race with his daughter. And then, just a month later, he decided to sign up for his first half marathon.
That really kick-started my running career, because at that half marathon, I qualified for the New York Marathon. So I ran the New York Marathon, and at New York, I qualified for Boston. So I was basically hurled into the marathon story, first New York, then Disney, and then Boston, all within 5 months.
He was hooked. Decades after he'd fallen in and out of love with running, Gene was back and better than ever, and determined to keep it that way.
If there's something I really enjoy doing, I'm not content to just do it, I want to do it as well as I can. I always wanted to try and do my best to see what my best was. There was just no other way to do it. Some things, when you're really into them, they're fun, but boy, you want to do your best. And when I did reasonably well in these first races, I didn't win or even place, but I was in the sort of striking distance, and so it became my consuming thing. I'm gonna get better at this. I had no idea back then that I would be, really good at it. I just wanted to get better. I always considered my fiercest competitor to be me from the previous year. I mean, that was the guy I wanted to beat. I hate losing to me. Each year I would pick a race that was longer, or try and do one that was faster, or try and do more races, or try and do them closer together. And after a couple of years of doing that, you're doing incredible things that you wouldn't have dreamed possible just a few years earlier.
Those incredible things, that includes running ultramarathons multiple times a year, some more than 200 miles long.
I mean, people run 50 miles and they say, oh, how could you possibly run 100? Because, it just gets harder and harder and harder. It's just a matter of just keeping on after a certain distance. At the end of the 200 milers, I certainly could have run further. What I couldn't do, though, is go without sleeping any further. That's the hard part of a 200, is doing all that with very, very little sleep. It really gets to you.
Gene is crushing it, but his journey hasn't been without its setbacks, starting from that first New York City marathon, before he even started competing in ultras.
No, I was not in top shape going into the New York marathon. I think it was about 4 weeks before the race, I developed this severe pain on the side of my knee. And I would run for 5 or 6 miles, and all of a sudden it would start hurting, and I'd have to slow down and would stop immediately if I stopped running. But I had in the back of my mind that I needed to run 3:45 to qualify for Boston. I wasn't even sure that my knee wouldn't act up. And I knew about the dreaded wall, and sure enough, with 6 miles to go, my feet started feeling like lead, but I knew I was on pace for Boston, and I refused to give in to it. That was probably the first time I realized that when the going gets tough, I was able to keep on going.
Because he was older, he felt better equipped to deal with it, to overcome this obstacle and make it to the finish line. Because even if it was painful, even if Gene felt like he wanted to stop during those last few miles, he was having fun again. And it was no coincidence that he was now a much better runner than he'd ever been, at a much older age than most of his competitors.
Running is always there. I'm proof of that. I didn't start running until I was 58, and I'm having the time of my life. It's been a wonderful journey.
I'm Hillary Allen, and this has been Athletes Unfiltered, a podcast by Strava. Thanks so much to our guests this week, Patricia Bertellier, Brad Huff, and Gene Dykes. If you have a goal, something you're striving toward, you should give Summit a try. Summit is Strava's membership program designed to help you achieve. It's our best features, made by athletes like you, for athletes like you, starting at a price lower than your average energy bar. Whatever your goal, Summit can help you get it. Join us at strava.com/summit. And to receive 1 month free, enter the code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST, all lowercase. As always, we want to hear your unfiltered stories. You can email them to us at podcast@strava.com. You can subscribe to Athletes Unfiltered in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen. Thanks again. We'll be back next week with more inspiring stories told by the runners and cyclists who live them.